State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy joining us once again. This is our first Tacky Talk podcast of July 2026. Tacky, how are
Yeah.
you?
Hey, Joe. I hope everybody is being safe and cool. We've talked about this at the beginning of summer, about the importance of being aware of your surroundings, especially a weekend where it's going to crack 100 degrees and the heat index is probably going to crack 110.
Yeah, it's a heat dome. It's been spreading across the country and now it's here. So it's not something to joke about. It's something to take seriously and use extra precautions. Hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. Stay in AC if you can, or take frequent breaks if you have to be outdoors.
And don't forget sunscreen.
Yep.
It's very important. This UV radiation is extremely high as well. So if you're going to be out for extended periods, you'll definitely remember to use the sunscreen. And and stay in the shade, obviously out of the sun as much as you can. And also eye protection. It's going to be very, very bright. So if you've got transition lenses like me, I don't think too hard about it. But you should really remember to bring your sunglasses along, given how intense the sunlight's going to be. And also be careful in your cars. The car's basically an oven. So, open those doors up, let it vent, turn on the AC, particularly if you got kids and dogs, you got health issues. You want that car temperature to go down before you get inside.
That's right. Yeah. Check on your neighbors if they have health issues, what have you. Just common sense things. We're just not used to it around here.
We don't get that many 100-degree days in this part of the country, but especially along the coastline. We generally benefit from the sea breeze. Obviously, the beach is going to be very crowded. So, everyone, please be mindful of, others when you're there. And because of the Merrimack sewage issue, there's the beaches on the way on the north side of the state is unavailable, which has actually created a crush of folks going to places like Gloucester.
Right.
And northern beaches, I'll just know for Boston. So it's going to be very, very crowded all around. And this morning I had to run some errands going down Route 3, and Cape traffic started right away at 8 a.m.
Oh yeah, it's going to be very, very busy there too, for sure. It's Independence Day, but people can stay here at home. There's lots of stuff going on in Quincy for America 250.
Yeah, you got the mayor obviously has events in Quincy Center, but we also have neighborhood events such as the Squanum Road Race tomorrow, and we have also the Housenek Family Fun Day tomorrow at 10 a.m. Although I still believe at 10 a.m. it's going to be absolutely brutal. So again, remind folks, just because we're on the beach doesn't mean that it's not dangerous. And of course, we have the Squanum Parade, but we also have the Merrimount Parade. And for me, because I represent Germantown and Adams Shore, they have the scholarship awarding in the morning, a small parade first thing at 9 a.m. And then Germantown has its also small parade and family fun day at about 10 a.m. start. So, there's plenty of events in neighborhoods going around, and doesn't include your neighbor's barbecues or other family-oriented events in the area. And if your neighbor has a pool, even better.
Yeah, I know a lot of neighborhoods kind of plan their own little activities around the bigger events every year. So it's when Quincy kind of shines as a small town, even though it's a big city.
Well, when I talk to my friends about July 4th, they're always surprised we don't actually do like a citywide July 4th event because we do Flag Day. And I explained to folks, especially my colleagues at the State House, that I'm in my situation, I have to do three neighborhood-oriented events, of which the Merrimount Parade is a legit big parade.
Oh, it's over 100 years old. Yeah.
And it's also about a mile and a quarter walk. And what I'm expecting to be perhaps close to 100 degrees and higher in the index on a walk that's 45 minutes to an hour, which I think we might be walking slightly faster this year.
Yeah.
I've
Maybe take a
noticed,
dunk at the beach at the end.
that we actually walk slightly faster depending if it's hot enough, everyone's trying to get moving a little quicker.
Sure.
But yeah, my other colleagues in the State House have like a July 3rd monster parade to get the 4th off, or they have nothing going on the 3rd. They have a big parade on July 4th and they're done. So, and thankfully, I'm not a senator. Senator Keenan has to be in like six different places, and Quincy has four of them
Right.
in his district. So, John is running around different spots trying to get from event to event. So I'm very thankful not to be a senator on July 4th, where you have to be in a multiple July 4th events.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's the big maritime festival out at Marina Bay as well, and the Adams National Historical Park has free events going on all weekend as well. So there's plenty for history buffs or, people who just want some fun and recreation, some live music. So it's lots going on.
And you can watch the fireworks from Wollaston Beach, or if you don't have to be on the beach exactly, but you're in the vicinity, you can play the pops on your streaming these days.
That's
When
right. Yep.
you're streaming, you can watch it from the bay, depending where you live. And you maybe even watch it from your back deck, depending where you live in Quincy.
Depending, yeah, that's the Boston one Saturday night. Then Sunday night, you can watch the Weymouth fireworks from Howes Neck.
Yeah, and I hear there's going to be some fireworks perhaps in Swanham on July 3rd as well.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah,
Okay.
a small barge is going to be out there. So there's me yet, and it in the there's gonna be a lot of activities. And in Boston, if you care to go into Boston, it's going to swell to probably 2 million people.
Oh, yeah.
So also be aware that you'll be crunched in, and it's going to be hot, but people around you are just going to be radiating heat too.
That's right.
And of course, the World Cup. Viewers are traveling back and forth following their teams.
Yep,
And then
it's a lot going on, yep.
tall ships coming in the middle of next month. I'm sorry, the middle of this month. So you got tall ships coming in for a week.
Yeah, including ones coming to Quincy, yeah.
Adds to economic stimulus locally, which should be great for the local economy. And so yeah, that's again three huge events going on right through 2 months. You have World Cup, 250th anniversary birthday party of the country, and tall ships right after.
And the tea is going to be free Saturday night starting at 8:30, so that'll help.
I hope a lot on getting people in and out quickly.
For sure, yeah. So we're in July now, Tacky, and we're into the new fiscal year, and the state has a budget.
We do have a budget we voted on yesterday, one day over, essentially. But we sent it to the governor. Governor's 10 calendar days. To veto, amend, line item veto, and sign into law the budget. We had passed a 1/12 budget prior. As I said before, this is not unusual practice because we've never ever shut down the state government during my lifetime. So there'll be a reconciliation when the budget's passed on the 10, 11 days into the fiscal year. The accountants will figure it out at the end of the fiscal year regarding the reconciliation of the short period of time that we used last year's budget.
Right. Yeah. I know it's one of the highlights. There's no new taxes or fees, I know, in the budget. There's some money allocated to the reserve fund. But any other standouts that you can think of?
Not too much. I mean, obviously, one of the big things that we continue to invest heavily is in education. But
Yep.
we raised the minimum pupil to $160 per pupil. In the school system, we have given more local aid. I'm sure every city and town wish they could give us more local aid, give them more local aid. But we again increased that to a record number. I know there's been a movement to try to tie all local aid to inflation numbers, which I get. The problem is that it's a limited size budget, so it's not complicated, right? You got a limited size budget. How are you going to automatically tie it to like inflation? It could be 4.2%
Right.
moving number every year. So what do you do when inflation goes down? You give city and towns less and they suddenly demand that you give them more? I mean, come on, people. I mean, let's get serious here. And again, it's a policy by moment of thinking, not policy and long-term thinking and things like that. So we put a record amount in. Medicaid continues to rise and eating up more and more of the budget every year as we grow older. And other than that, I mean, earmarks are pretty slim. A lot of folks, got a shave on earmarks, including myself. A lot of my stuff was cut by 50%. I'm not the only one. But otherwise, it's a pretty lean budget as we get ready for October 1st, which is a federal fiscal year. And we'll see what the fallout is regarding, all these changes in social programs. And maybe Congress will pass some other laws prior to the election day
Yeah.
that could impact us as well. So this uncertainty continues to loom. I've been talking about uncertainty for 2 years now, but it is a real thing, and it's hard to pivot if you don't know what's going to happen, and you're preparing for something you don't know what it's going to look like.
Yes, final figures at the 63.7 billion, I think, and like 2.6 billion from the millionaires tax, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit more aggressive this year on the millionaires tax than the past. We'll see if we hit our numbers. The past two cycles, we ended up a surplus from millionaires tax. We were too conservative in the estimate. This should maybe a little bit closer to based on past experience on the millionaires tax. And if there's a surplus, we'll find out about it, next year.
Right, exactly. What happens to the surplus if there is some?
It's by constitution, we have to spend it.
Okay, I see. So and to those areas that it's designated for, right? Transportation, education,
That's correct.
yeah,
It's one of
okay.
those few situations where we're by constitution, you guys voted for this, by the way.
Right.
We're stuck.
Yep.
We're forced spend on this. Not to diverge too much, but another state that has this problem is California.
Yes, I was reading about that actually. It's very interesting.
Yeah, the voters created forced spend, which takes a lot of power out of the legislature to try to control spending.
Right.
It's a very dangerous method on budgeting. So while this is thankfully limited to a very specific income source, people say, tax and spend. Well, voters voted for that in the Constitution, in this very narrow circumstance. But it also takes flexibility in a way if we need to put stuff in a rainy day fund or move things between line items to another essential program, that option's taken away.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Can you kind of put it in like in hold in the rainy day fund and then spend it later, or does it have to get spent right away?
It has to get spent.
It does. Okay.
Yeah, we've done stuff like moving to like certain trust funds, like the Transportation Trust Fund, but
Yes.
that stuff is constantly coming out.
Okay,
So
gotcha.
it's not like a lot of money stays in those funds because there's always going to be constant expenditures and capital improvements.
Yeah, I see. Okay. Which was actually approved by a ballot initiative, right? A ballot question. And speaking of, we got our first inquiry into the Tacky Talk podcast, Tacky, after 6 years.
I know it's I do actually appreciate any kind of response to
Yeah.
anyone listening to us. And of course, we do encourage people to also reach out to Joe directly at Keyway TV at keywaytv.org. And if especially want to hear something that you like to hear, since it is Joe's show, especially if you like to say it's Tacky Talk, Keyway TV at keywaytv.org, and Joe will make a decision on whether or not it's something he can put on his show. But no, thank you very much. I really do appreciate feedback. I really do. And after like 6 years, we'd like to hear from folks. So we had talked a little bit before the show began about this, just to let you all know. Joe actually did review the tape.
I did. I went back and listened. The email was questioning your comments about the way signatures were collected for the rent control ballot initiative. And I went back and listened to it. You didn't say that all the signatures, were paid. That we would some of them you said were paid, but not all of them. And this person was a volunteer collecting signatures, giving their own time, and took some issue with the fact that you didn't mention that there were some volunteers.
Yeah, I think absence of words is what caused that. And this is a third party from Joe, not me saying it. So it's actually better if Joe does review the tape than myself. By absence of saying there were volunteers, it seemed to create some misunderstanding regarding that. When I say some were paid for, by logical extension, that means if you're not paying someone, they're a volunteer. But I didn't make that a clear statement. Generally, it would think that if I say some are paid for, then what about the ones that aren't paid for?
Right,
Which then
right.
would should reach the logical conclusion. I'm saying by absence of the words, not saying the words, logical conclusion should be that the ones aren't paid for must be done by volunteers.
Right. So
So
certainly acknowledge that, yeah.
yeah, so the lack of additional words as opposed to let you surmise on your own, the absence of some words clearly created some degree of
Right.
misunderstanding.
Yeah.
So since it is some, not all, it should be able to logically dictate that I'm not only talking about certain circumstances.
Yep.
But I sent you some information, Joe, because part of the fun part about this is open a different can of worms. about ballot questions and how they're paid for.
Yes, very interesting to read this information from the Office of Campaign and Political Finance. So it's on record with the state regarding the amount of in-kind donations that were given to try and get this question passed. Over almost $750,000 in-kind donations.
Yeah,
Pretty astounding, yeah.
it is astounding. This is so I guess we're going to give an campaign finance lesson today a little bit from a
Yeah, I
guy that
think it'll be
basically,
interesting.
yeah, given a guy that spends a lot of time making sure he stays in compliance, and sometimes he's misses a few, and campaign finance does send him a phone call like, hey, you missed a couple, and everyone's imperfect, but I do spend a lot of time on this component. So ballot questions are not done the same way as my campaign account, and they're not done the same way as political action committees, and they're not done the same as independent expenditures. Ballot questions have their own separate reporting system, and it's calendar based. So you will not find a 2026 report right now, since I helped Joe out and gave him some information. So an in-kind donation means that it's a donation that you did not give money to the cause, in this case, a ballot question, and instead you report what you did for them and the amount of money that you spent. In many of these cases, you notice is a not-for-profit corporation. It's a corporate for the purposes of definition. It's still a corporation, not-for-profit or for-profit.
Oh,
Doesn't
yeah.
matter. It's a corporation that has spent their money to a cause, but never actually gave you cash. And what is remarkable about this is the size of the volume relative to the actual receipts of cash. So on both the proponents and opponents, they both utilize in kind. The difference is that the proponents of this bill raised a total of, let's see here, $57,721-ish dollars. They spent about 17,784-ish and about 39,937-ish. So just under 40 grand left. But on this report, I have shows like 689,990. So, 600, almost $690,000 in in-kind donations. And you look through it, it's predominantly corporate entities. I know they're not for profits, but under Citizens United, a corporation's a corporation.
Right.
What its purpose is irrelevant. Citizens United says it's a corporation. So, in this instance, you have corporations. And I did some back of the envelope math. So, they had a law firm for 8,273. And then, but if you look at the in-kind personal use, it was 200,000, 211,000 plus for
Yes.
in-kind labor. And you had about $168,000 in quote unquote independent contractor labor, which means that that entity paid for independent contractors, I'm guessing. And then if you add it together, more than 50% of the in-kind donations are actually 45% of it is in-kind donations was labor-based.
Yes.
And for disclosure purposes, in my world as a candidate, when I get in kind, I actually have to go more descriptive than saying the words. What's the words they use? In kind staff. Let me look up a couple of words here. They use the words in kind staff time, in kind independent contractor. They don't actually go into what the staff actually did.
I see. Okay.
In my world, if let's say Joe Catalano decided to do something for me, I would have to say, in-kind donation for pizza for a meet and greet.
Oh, so you have to be much more detailed about what the money was spent. Okay.
Yeah, I would get a phone call
I see.
if it's not sufficient detail what it used for. And I'm capped at $1,000 because it'd be a personal donation and also cannot be a corporate donation. So it have to come out of Joe Catalano's pocket.
I see.
It cannot be from Joe Catalano Corporation.
Gotcha. Okay.
So you would make a donation as opposed to cash to me directly through buying the pizza to host at your home to do a meet and greet. And then I report it as, let's say, $200, for example. And that if you want to give me a cash donation, that eats into $1,000. That means you only get an $800 opportunity for a cash donation.
Oh, so it has to be in whole, $1,000.
That's correct.
Okay.
And OCPF does not love this method, I'm aware of. And they don't like doing reimbursements. They like us to avoid it whenever possible.
Oh, interesting.
Extraordinary circumstances make it difficult. I have to do reimbursement. The preference is I actually pay for the pizza myself. That is the
Right.
preference.
Out of your campaign account, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay.
That is, they prefer the cleanest way possible for disclosures
Sure.
for my candidate campaign account.
Yep. Yep.
Ballot questions do not follow this method. And the detail is very vague, right? What is that used for? So were they, and let's be frank about this, it's a ballot question. You pay lawyers to get the ballot question. You pay people to do the legal work. We discussed last time about the fact that you pay for legal work, you should get good work,
Right.
but not my problem. And then the remaining process of a ballot question is collecting signatures. So we have about 313,000 of in-kind staff that were utilized from these various corporate entities. Yes, they're not-for-profits, but they're still corporate entities. What were these $313,000 in-kind staff doing?
We don't know because they're not required to report it. Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you have to
So
assume. Yeah.
you have to make some assumptions on your
Right.
own. You're welcome listening to us. I'll let you make your own assumptions what you do, because when you ballot question process, hire an attorney to write your ballot question, or you can write it yourself. The 10
Right.
people sign that ballot question, submitted to the secretary of state, and then you collect your first round of signatures. They have to collect a second round and collect a third round of signatures. That's the process.
Yep. Now, in this particular case, the bigger concern I think of this person that wrote to you is personal interest out of fear that rent's going to be unaffordable. So, they had a stake in this issue.
Well, yeah, exactly. And it's
Right.
great for folks to actually be engaged in causes.
Yes,
I'm
yes.
taking a lot of emails requesting support and opposite, both support and opposing things.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And, I'm very aware that issues can change as bills do change and evolve in the state house constantly. So what you start and what you finish doesn't always mean the same thing, which makes it tricky for people trying to stake out positions, particularly since I'm not always in negotiation as part of parties that's engaged in these issues. People sometimes believe that 200 of us, the House and Senate, somehow have all direct say. Generally, the proponents and opponents are the ones that are leading the causes.
Right.
Because I have my own issues, I lead the cause too, and also issues I oppose the cause as well. So,
Sure.
just like everybody else in the building. So, public policy about ballot question is fine. We talk about we have a lot of them this year. We'll see where the chips lie moving forward on these issues. However, we should not disregard that there are different rules here from candidates and ballot questions and political action committees where you can pretty much take money or in-kind donations from basic businesses.
Yep.
Well, I'm only limited to taking it from individuals.
Yeah. This has really led to a new bill proposal, right? An act improving campaign finance reporting for statewide ballot questions. So this is going to be very interesting to see where this goes, as it's calling for much more transparency, basically on how these signatures are collected and how they're reported and how they're paid for.
Yeah, so for myself and political action committees and independent expenditures, we're on an accelerated reporting system, meaning that we're not annual. So ballot questions right now submit their reports on an annual basis. As you get closer to election day, try to remember you have to submit right before election day, but they're really an annual-based system. And legislators and city councilors of a certain size community are what we call a depository system. So my campaign finance report is shown monthly. So when the bank submits my bank statement to me, they're also submitting my bank statement to Office of Campaign Political Finance. When I write a check, they scan those checks, and sometimes the letters don't come up correctly. Sometimes they miss the Q on Quincy High School, for example, because of my printing. And as a result, you look like some squiggly words that I will go in and correct online to say the word Quincy High School. And that's how it's disclosed on a monthly basis. Same one receipts donation. So
Yeah.
all my donations also on a monthly basis receipt. So if you want to see my campaign account at the end of each month, it is updated from the bank to Office of Campaign Political Finance. And I will get a phone call at the end of a beginning of each month, sometimes saying, hey, could you clarify this? I don't know what this anagram means. So if the payable is to a charity that is like A, B, C, D, E, for example, and that's how it's going to be paid. That's how the check's made out because that's what they say to make it out to. I'll get a call from campaign finance saying, what does A, B, C, D, E mean? Because just because it's payable to that's what it's payable to, it doesn't reflect the fact that the public knows what it's payable to.
Right, I see. Okay.
So I have to go in and clarify the pay who I paid to by actually stating a full name, for example. And then sometimes the memo section gets gobbledygooky. I don't know what's going on. You get these random letters, and I'm going to correct those as well to make it clearer. So when I do like a Quincy Sun graduation advertising, for example, which I've done, I try to put the dates in when those ads went into Quincy Sun. And then, if it's kind of gobbledygooky as a scan come through, I go in and correct it by manually. So we're actually a very high disclosure rate regarding our campaign finance stuff because while we quarterly report, meaning every quarter, we actually have to clarify everything, or we'd start to get penalized for lack of clarity. The reporting system. So even refunds, for example, as I mentioned earlier, my mom had passed away, and there was some chaos at the house regarding a tree during that time period. And I couldn't leave to go to New Orleans for a new National Conference State Legislators Energy Conference. As a result, I had to get a refund for my plane ticket, which is going to be put back in my campaign account. You're going to see Delta as a contributor because they refunded. But I have
Because
to
it's a refund. Okay.
I have to do a correction in the report saying that it's not a contributor, it is a non-contributor because it's a refund. Meanwhile,
Okay.
I'm paying a penalty on the hotel because I canceled too late because
Well, right. Yeah.
who could predict the storm and a mom who's dying on you?
Right.
So the campaign finance actually have to show an expenditure where I'm taking a penalty on the hotel room.
I see. Okay. So this bill would hold these ballot question petitioners to that same standard or very similar standards.
Yeah, or put them onto the monthly deposit system, which candidates and I believe the PACs are too as well. So you can see monthly exactly the revenue coming in, the expenditures, and the in-kind donations. And right now for 2026, none of us really know what's going on.
So yeah, and this I think this passed the House with complete support, as I recall reading.
Yeah, I think it was 145 to zero or yesterday. We feel that since we already have everybody else seemingly on the same system or similar systems, there's no reason not to put everybody on the same system. We do actually ban individual signature gatherers, meaning in the sense that you can't pay per signature. You can pay on salary. You can pay other ways to ensure your people are compensated if you want to pay signatures. But we looked into this thing on a constitutional level, along as there's a mechanism for an entity or someone to pay for signatures in a manner that is not too intrusive on First Amendment rights, that's fine. So basically, if you're wage based, that's okay, but you can't do pay by individual signatures. So
Okay, all right.
we do that. We have Secretary of State do more public reporting on the signature gathering process. We have greater reviews by Office of Campaign Finance to bring them to greater review process similar to our candidates as candidates. So it's basically going to be held by the same standards.
Same standards, yep.
We hope
Right,
for
well, right, yeah.
cross my fingers. There's a lot of OCPF has a lot of discretion on these things. And there's a word here requiring disclosure of in-kind contributions exceeding $50, including contributor information, contributor type, and evaluation. Of course, that's subject to Office of Campaign Finance interpretation. Which I'm hoping it becomes more, as I described at the beginning, what we're subject to. And also, it's just like us, if you're getting $500 more in donation, money donation, you have to report that 72 hours within 72 hours prior to the 10 days of election. So same as me, if I get a $500 donation 10 days before election, I have to report that 72 hours inside that time period. So what that does is that it was a massive infusion of money. That disclosure is made right away, just like candidates. So if I did somehow get like 10 days before election day, Whether or not I'm opposed or not, it's irrelevant in my case.
Okay.
Candidate against me or no candidate, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Okay.
If I get $500 donations in large chunks at the end, I still have to report within 72 hours.
Okay.
So let's say, even let's I have no primary opponent this year, September 1. I collect, let's say, $5,000 on August 27th. I got to get that reported in 72 hours.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
It's real, regardless of whether or not you're going to vote.
Yeah. So this would be the same transparency for ballot questions then.
Yeah, and
Okay.
we do that over independent expenditure accounts as well as political action committees. So we're bringing everyone more in compliance, meaning that, when the next set of ballot questions come forward, you don't just get an annual report. You should be getting monthly reports that the public can look up on their own, and just like us, look at themselves. And we're going to create a special committee to review this issue further. The ballot initiative process in the Constitution was established in 1918. I've been aware that there have been movements in the past to change the Constitution unsuccessfully. They never made it out of the committees that they referred to. I remember Stan Rosenberg, the former Senate president, had talked and tried to do this a few different times, but never got any traction in the state. So yeah, we're people say that, want some more transparency, here it is. And I do think that it's nice to have some more uniformity with a higher standard of reporting, which is the standard legislators are. We are the highest standard of reporting, the legislators.
So
Well,
this,
actually, elected officials are part of the OCPF system, but the higher standard.
Does this go into conference committee now, Jackie? How does that work?
Yeah, it's probably going to a conference committee at some level. I don't think the Senate has deviated too far from us. Hopefully, this is a fairly quick resolution. If they have, we can avoid a conference committee if both sides decide to correct some small issues, and we can try to do some suspension of rules and amend during enactment phase.
Oh, well, that would expedite things.
Yeah, if there's an agreement that this is not a problem, or they decide to do like what we call like a 2-day conference committee, they form one and report back out 2 days later because the agreement was done before, and just do
And then
that.
dissolve the committee because you don't need it anymore.
Yeah, just do the quick two-day thing, and then dissolve, and off we go to the floor. So there's not that big variation, and both branches want to create a higher standard regarding accountability and use of money, and better knowledge of for all of us, who is behind these various ballot questions in terms of.
Well, this I know is a this was a pet peeve of the speaker, really. He's talked about this almost a year ago.
I always am surprised that us as a legislature has not just put everybody on the same uniform system, because the technology is there, the regulations are there regarding, elected officials, and I do know that it's some differences. Like, Citizens United allows ballot questions and PACs to take corporate money, and I can't. I don't. Again, I don't care. I mean, that's not
Sure.
able to me personally in terms of my fundraising. It doesn't affect my fundraising because of that. But I mean. There should be some easy uniformity that when I look at, a PAC account or a ballot initiative account, that, I'm working with the same standard that I understand using my accounts.
Can we get just back to the rent control issue for a minute? So the Supreme Court struck down the rent control ballot initiative, but is there also a bill pending
There's been a
that
bill
would?
pending. There's been bills on this issue since the end of rent control.
Okay, all right. Which was what,
This thing's
30 years
94.
ago?
Yeah, 94.
Okay.
So since the end of rent control by ballot initiative, there's always been a rent control bill or some
Okay.
variation nonstop. Obviously, if there's been a bill floating around for 30 years since 1994,
Yeah.
I'm just saying,
Yeah.
people think it's a new issue. It's not a new issue. It's just
Oh, right.
various forms.
Yeah.
It's like the seatbelt stuff. Remember those?
Oh, I do remember that. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're old enough, remember the seatbelt ballot question campaign that was just the height of talk radio.
Oh, it's well, that's how issues got talked about back then. There was no social media, so yes.
Yeah, it actually people should look up that information, that whole story about seatbelts in Massachusetts. Actually, it's fascinating education and politics.
Yes. Both sides were deeply entrenched in that issue for sure. I remember it well.
I do understand the issue of rent control. I mean, people forget there was such thing as rent control boards or rent review boards in every
Yeah.
community as part of original rent control. You know, it's a wonderful idea. One of the major challenges, of course, is supply and demand, and rent control doesn't talk about that whatsoever. It's trying to create a new mechanism on controlling rents. And if you live through rent control before, particularly in Cambridge and Boston, there are some unintended consequences as a result of that. And but it still would not address the underlying issues that you control some rents, but it doesn't address the supply issue. And this is the problem of a larger, harder conversation of how we got here, and how do you address the supply problem? And remember during COVID, Boston rents actually went down for a little bit because people didn't renew their rents coming to the city because students weren't coming back, for example.
Right.
And the student population is a large portion of rent impact, whether you like it or not. And it's also an important part of our local economy. So, I mean, if you do things like rent control, that's, I get, I understand the idea, but it doesn't actually address the underlying issue regarding supply.
So, would you agree, though, increasing rents are an issue or a problem?
Oh, it is. It's a
Yeah.
market-related issue. As I said, for a brief moment, you had nobody coming in to students, so rents went down as people try to like entice people during COVID to do rentals, which was not going to happen,
Yeah.
right? And then when, I'm not blaming the students. I'm just pointing out there's a supply and demand issue of
Yep.
whether it be workers or whatever. It doesn't matter who the individuals we're talking
Well,
about.
the housing shortage has been discussed for many years now here in Massachusetts, leading to higher costs in general, including rent.
Correct, and the housing issue. And then we passed some housing bond bills to try to stimulate more housing construction.
Yep.
Of course, Congress, the president vetoed a housing stimulus bill already,
Yes.
which
Called it
was,
a, I think he called it a big yawn.
that's correct, which everybody in the legislature, everybody in Congress is facing the same problem regarding housing supply. So, it's a larger conversation about the great financial crisis that created, well, it's a little more difficult that people realize of why we how we got here. It's not a simple answer.
Yeah.
But I mean, things like rent control doesn't actually address supply issues.
Seeing as we're talking about economic issues, some numbers out today, Jackie, that we can talk about, right?
Yeah, the unemployment rate went down to 4.2% from 4.3%. Unemployment claims came out below average. For all intents and purposes, unemployment claims is stagnant. They're not really growing.
Yeah, Massachusetts, we're talking, right?
State nationwide.
Oh, the
We'll get
nationwide, okay.
the Massachusetts number next week.
Oh, okay.
You have to, because it doesn't quite break down that quickly. Also, July 4th holiday kind of makes it weird tomorrow.
Right, gotcha, okay.
Tomorrow's the holiday observed.
Yes.
So we got this real interesting dichotomy where you have wages are not meeting inflation. Inflation's over 4.2%, and then wage growth's like at 3.1%. Mind you, this is month over month, and then, but also, wages and unemployment has been stagnated for
Yeah.
almost a full year now. The unemployment number has really not moved off that four above 4% during this. Actually, oddly enough, during this presidency, interestingly. And wage growth hasn't really grown that much either in its presidency. It just coincidentally happens to coincide with Trump presidency that this is happening.
Yeah.
And then you can argue, we can argue later about economic policy impacting this, but just happenstance, it just happens to be this way right now. As a reflection again, this K-shaped economy, and consumer confidence is low, but consumer spending continues to be steady, and prices are out of control still. In terms of people meeting their costs. And when you break down the CPI, the consumer price index numbers to individual components, groceries most definitely are still exceeding people's wages, which is key. Same thing of gas, although gas is a longer conversation again about this crazy global politics of oil and gas issues. So there is a real concern here, and we should all be concerned because we're living with it, is that when your wage growth doesn't keep up with CPI, particularly the sections associated with essential goods like food, at some point the consumer is going to break.
Right. Yeah, I did see signs of it actually this morning. Labor Department reported slower job growth than anticipated.
Yeah, the jolt showed slower job growth as well. And as I said before, it's a little bit tricky because given the fact that we've had massive deportations of undocumented folks that were employed, whether under the table or with a social security number, they can't collect unemployment. So the unemployment number is always a little bit tricky to deal with because it's a combination of businesses reporting to the Department of Labor, which is why you have revisions because some people report late. And it's not every business. They do a massive sampling. And on this other side of it, there's actual unemployment claims. And if you're working under the table or you're anybody working under the table, actually, or you've been deported, you're not gonna, and you had a social security number, does it, you're not gonna take that claim. So
You
it's
won't
really
show up in that statistic, right? Yeah.
that's correct. So it's a
Yeah.
really quandary here to try to pin down exactly what's going on because it doesn't make a lot of sense in some ways. The economy is slowing, but it isn't slowing like off a cliff.
Right.
And the GDP numbers keep getting revised on first quarter higher and lower because it's largely driven by consumer spending and the trade deficit continues to grow, which was promised it wouldn't. And it's again, all this macro data is not translating to you and me sitting here together about our real life costs.
Yet, I think is the key word.
Yet is the key word. We'll see how it goes. I mean, we talk about gas prices. I mean, it's somewhere between 3.57 to like 3.75, depending what gas
Yeah.
you're talking about for
Yeah.
unleaded. Obviously, if you're a high rent area where costs are higher, that it's going to be maybe as much as 50 cents, 75 cents more, depending where you are in the state. But that's we already felt the first set of sticker shocks, and airlines aren't inclined to bring down their various fees and whatever they're doing now to make up costs in other groups. And then, it's again, this is such a hard conversation to have because there's so many moving targets in the macro data and are sitting here with you and me talking about, I don't know, what we're paying for groceries and everything else. This seems to be a disconnect.
Yeah, I would agree. And nobody, even the people that do this for a living, have a clear answer for it.
No, absolutely not,
Yeah.
because the stock market is strong, but there's like $9 trillion in money market accounts. And a lot of people do money markets for IRAs and other retirements, and it's a slow growth fund. But there's no such thing as 100% safe, but it's a lot safer than the stock market. And people who are investors, whether it be people managing other people's money or hedge funds or whatever, have a lot of their money in money market too, which means that they're not putting into the stock market, but the stock market's like
Right.
insane growth right now. And there's this whole disconnect here, right? People are hoarding money, including professional money managers, but the market is still very strong. And it's like a big disconnect regarding the fact that, most 90% of folks can't afford as much as they could a year ago.
Right. Yeah, it's yeah, puzzling. We'll have to leave it at
It's
that.
a longer conversation
Yeah.
about chip stocks and AI and all that stuff. But yeah, it's a longer conversation.
No, we just don't have time for that, Jackie, because we're all out of time today.
Yeah, we are a little bit abbreviated for the holiday. Joe, if you want to pick up this conversation a different day, we can always do that.
Sure.
But yeah, no, we are open at the State House. Although in this heat, you don't want to be there. Our heat cooling system does not work properly,
Oh, great.
as my staff reminds me constantly. We have a lot of fans in the basement office. So room 42 of the State House, I do not recommend come visiting us right now. You will bake. But yeah, room 42 of the State House, 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. Feel free to call if you got a question or a concern or an opinion. Happy to hear it. And we have tacky.chan at mahouse.gov, tackey.chan at mahouse.gov is the email. We have State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook. We have corresponding Instagram. Tackychan.org is a resource page. MALegislature.org, GOV, MALegislature.gov GOV very much encourage folks to use the legislative website. You
Mm-hmm.
get a lot of information, and you can very well do your own tracking your bills and observe us on our recorded video. And of course, Joe here every week or 2 weeks, depending on our schedules. I suspect as we head into the summer and fall, we might be taking some time off ourselves. But I know we'll be here to try to, create some hopefully interesting conversation. Please give feedback and response on what you like to hear, with Joe at QATV at QATV.org.
Jackie, wishing you, your family, your colleagues a very happy and safe Independence Day holiday.
You too, Joe. Stay safe, everyone. Stay cool and be well.